Thank you, Joan. Thanks for bringing us all together. I've been out of town a lot this spring, and I thought this was Ed O'Chester tribute night, so I am underprepared. I'm going to read a few poems of mine from the water books, and then I'm going to read a few poems of Ed's. But as Joan said, every night is Ed tribute night, so... George de Beauvoir breaks his silence. This is a quote. Simone has a man's brain. She thinks like a man. She is a man. He said this without affect or inflection. His daughter continued writing in her notebook. This poem has an epigraph that explains the title, too, from Yanis Ritsos' poem, The Blackened Pot. And this is the Kimon Friar translation that Michael Worster and I love so much. And the line from the poem is, "These red spots on the walls could also be blood." The title of the poem is, "A woman I meet translates a line from Ritsos." So it's a found poem. "Not a spot on the wall, as your English says, not a blotch or a smear or even a pool of blood attached to the wall like a hardened splash, but a kind of tattoo on the firing squad wall. Flesh blasted onto the whitewashed wall, a tattoo the people bear for generations, a pierced graft people see on each other's backs as they sit on beaches of the Aegean or under olive trees. Invisible needles pick at the brand in the skin, tissue over the heart." I thought with the SCOTUS decisions, I would read two poems that seem to me like ancient history in a way now, but surely are not, the events described here. Pasolini, you might know, was arrested and put on trial, not just for his writing, which was X-rated and censored in Italy for many years, but for his gay lifestyle, his gayness, his outness for so many years. So this is called "Styx Found in a Ravine." "Kindling a bonfire in honor of Pasolini, who prayed to his own mother, cursing and thanking her for too much love. His film critiques gave me a headache, but his Decamerone changed my girl life, seeing the lover cup her hand on her man's cock, both sleeping on an open porch. Up here in the Pamphili woods, I'm leaving a hobo prayer stick for Pasolini and one for Jimmer, destroyed in the first wave of AIDS. I can never find Pasolini, but the Roman poems helped my first efforts. They do now. It was my mother's love let me slide my tongue inside the slit of a woman, suck a man clean. I can't find you in Via Carini's sweet, queer passeggiata. Didn't find you among Testaccio's crushed lamps and bones. In your time, boys run to you for bags of oranges and bread. Boys you run to for love and vanish in smoke and hunger. A few of these words sting with sweet salt. From this gay life, neither you nor I fully embrace. Say the body beautiful wherever it falls on the slippery continuum," you wrote. "Your Friulian, your local rough dialect, busted the Italian canon wide open. You shouldn't have gone after desperate boys with guns at night. Were you meeting your beloved? Does anybody know what really happened? Dear, famous, love child." And this one is a love poem to the Yauk River. And it's true that I think the Donegal exit off the turnpike was built to accommodate the Kaufman family's desire for a country house, and Frank Lloyd Wright needed his people to get in there and build it. So that's referenced in the poem. Camping on the Yaukagene. Rocks in human-like shapes lift their knees in the shallows, getting a taste of lunar light. And the dead file past on the left bank, one or two leaving traces. Howl like a wolf, I command my stick and point at the moon. The sky simplifies itself to a pale gray swath tinted blue, while the river twists below and above the Mason-Dixon line all the way to McKeesport and the great valley of brown fields, and down south, east again, into the white water we worship at like a font with our pride and fear by which we, the president said, out of context, cling to our guns and religion. And he was right. Defacements line the phone poles, spray painted. They want him dead. Within eye range of falling water, where Wright brushed patented Cherokee red paint onto his pipeways and gutters, the rims of fireplaces and windows. When my brothers waterproofed our gates, pipes, jungle gym, and handlebars, they used Rust-Oleum sparingly, as if it were ground from pigments brought from Florence, where our father once stood sketching his version of a stronger Duomo roof. Wright's project required a special exit off the turnpike for his breakthrough client, Edgar Kaufman, and Edgar Jr.'s salons of New York School Country Weekends in the Laurels. Edgar Jr., still closeted by tour guides, whose script reads, he was scholarly. A hawk's short flight to the Yauk, whose death trap water knots have claimed drunks, kayakers, lovers, and billions of fragments of starlight. Now you see them, now they're pinched away and down and in below my rock ledge in the thrashing. The shelf is slippery with springs, slush pushing gravel, grit, and splinters of shale off its edges into holes that thrust like geysers from side-tipped emerald vases, ejecting runways for meadowlarks. The lower Yauk drags its sleeves along the thin creeks of Star Junction, where Butchie and Judgy's company house floorboards once split and a child nearly slipped down into the slime-yellow waters. Turn back, east of the mill, look up to Polly's Lookout, where couples sipping Manhattans, the women wearing rhinestones big as grapes, gaze through picture windows, down to the massive curve, to the juncture. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to turn to some poems from this great new book, Sugar Run Road by Ed Ochester. And if he reads these same poems, they're worth hearing twice. I don't know what he's doing. I teach some of the time in New Jersey, and I've been spending a lot more time there than I ever thought I would. So I thought I'd read The Damnation of New Jersey. And just to say that one of the things that I admire very much about Ed's work is the way he can bend time and write about history or to history in the present and not revise it. But you know that you're in this moment when you're getting the sort of lens on that. For example, the Uncle Frank of the poem is of the great generation, which, you know, many of us in this room know about, and many others of us don't know anything about it at all. And that war. The Damnation of New Jersey. Uncle Frank despised it, couldn't understand why some of our family lived there. Though to me, my Jersey cousins, George and Sybil, were exciting, mysterious, and gay. Frank hated Jersey drivers and ridiculed their towns, Nutley, Hohokus, Peapack, Bivalve, and Hackensack, and had he lived, would have targeted the endless McMansion miles, the all-we-know-of-hell strip malls. Ah, Mahwah, Cheesequake, Piscataway, Secaucus, Tuckahoe, and Sukasuna. He told me that where the Giants now play football, giant pipes disgorge raw sewage, and that the local farmers planted their tomatoes in the ooze. He did admit those are the best tomatoes he ever ate. What can I tell you? Frank was a plain man, a truck driver, who loved me and was always kind. He never read poetry, surely not Yeats, and would have been surprised to hear that love will pitch its tent in the very place of excrement. So another Bowchester history poem. I think of it that way. So it's looking back, and we're listening to the music now. Goldberg Variations. Instead of writing the speech I have to deliver next week, I'm listening to the music Bach wrote for his student, Johann Goldberg, who was employed by an insomniac count who wanted music through his long nights, don't we all? And I wonder what the Nazis did with this piece. They couldn't disappear the Urmeister of German music the way they did poor Mendelssohn. Perhaps they renamed it the Goebbels Variations, the bastards, which illustrates how a great culture can sour in the blink of an eye, or auf Deutsch, ein Augenblick, perhaps even ours one day. But enough sadness. How lovable is the endless invention of Bach, who must have loved Goldberg, to expend such energy and grace on this music. Even though he was given a little casket of golden coins in payment by the Count, Bach the ever practical. And now I've just come to the 31st variation and the aria, the end, and must try to emulate him who was so disciplined in his art and who perhaps, after chatting happily with young Goldberg, sighed for a moment, then said, back to work. And I chose these two poems to end with to try to show how I read Ed in this way. He'll have a history poem side by side with a meditation on a lyric on the present moment, as Cavafy does in his collections often. Poem from the deep past, right? The deep Greek past, and then a love poem of the present moment. September Rain. Old house of children's laughter and tears. Then and now the spruces bend under the rain. The red maple we planted last spring has survived the summer's drought. The garden is ready for snow. I've spent much of my life walking a few acres between two unnamed hills. I shouldn't brag, I know. So many people don't know where they live. And last poem, at the farm store. The owner, a clever woman who works hard and is prosperous, blonde and pretty, tells her friend, "Oh, the figs are all gone from the vine outside my bedroom. You have no idea how wonderful it was to wake up and open the window and eat one."